Daniel Webster said that the greatest thought I've ever thought in my life is my personal accountability to God. We all sense that accountability to people that maybe we work for or our family or whatever, and we're often intimidated by people or overwhelmed by them or whatever, by their position or power or their authority figures in our life. But hey, let's don't forget something, people. The serious accountability of life is that one day we will stand before God. I pray that you will stand before His judgment seat and not in front of the great white throne.
People think. We feel pressure from those in authority. We strive to please bosses, family, leaders, anyone whose opinion holds weight. But you know something? Nothing compares to the accountability that's coming. This is Hope for Today. And as David Hawking just reminded us, one day we will stand before God Himself. Imagine that moment. There's no title to protect you, no crowd to support you, no position or power to lean on. Just the soul. Alone before the great white throne. Revelation 20 verses 11 through 15 describe it. Heaven and earth flee from His face. The books are opened, every secret exposed, and whoever's name is not found written in the book of life is cast into the lake of fire. This is day two of David's message, the great white throne, and he'll take us back into Revelation chapter 20 verses 11 through 15 in just a moment. First, just before today's lesson, I want to let you know about learning to praise in the Psalms. This is the print edition of David's one-year devotional book, Through the Psalms. It's a wonderful tool to have you ready for daily devotions each day of 2026, starting on New Year's Day. The book, Learning to Praise in the Psalms, is just $20, and this is going to help you begin the new year with your heart focused on the Lord through His Word, in the book of Psalms. Order your copy of Learning to Praise in the Psalms by calling 800-75-BIBLE, that's in the U.S., or 888-75-BIBLE in Canada. Bible is 24253, or you can purchase online at davidhawking.org. Let's get back to Revelation chapter 20, verses 11 through 15 now, and here's David with today's study.
And I saw a great white throne, and Him that sat on it, from whose face the earth and the heaven fled away, and there was found no place for them. And I saw the dead, small and great, stand before God, and the books were open. And another book was open, which is the book of life. And the dead were judged out of those things which are written in the books, according to their works. And the sea gave up the dead that were in it, and death and hell delivered up the dead that were in them. And they were judged every man according to their works. And death and hell were cast into the lake of fire. This is the second death. And whosoever was not found written in the book of life was cast into the lake of fire. Go back to chapter 20 of Revelation and look at verse 12 and 13. The second area that I want you to look at after looking at the description of the one who judges and His awesome power. But look at the dead who are judged here very carefully. Just take a real close look at the dead who are judged. And I'd like you to see just three simple things. One, apparently their position in life is not a factor in the day of judgment. Isn't it interesting that God says in verse 12, I saw the dead small and great. Everybody's on equal footing here. Small and great. And also, their position before the throne, to me, is a reminder of our ultimate accountability because it says they stand before God. The old-time evangelists and preachers of a century ago used to refer to that very many times, that one day we shall all stand before God. And it's not because there aren't chairs. It's emphasizing accountability. To stand before God means you're going to answer to Him. The serious accountability of life is that one day we will stand before God. I pray that you will stand before His judgment seat and not in front of the great white throne. And a third thing I'd mention is that the place from which they come clearly reveals their identity. You say, why is that? Well, look at it again, verse 13. The sea gave up the dead that were in it. I think that's God's little reminder that if you don't bury, but you burn, and you throw the ashes to the sea, God knows where they are. It's just an interesting little point. The sea gave up the dead that were in it, and death and hell, the word for hell is Hades, meaning the place of the unseen, and Hades, death and Hades delivered up the dead that were in them. That tells me clearly the identity of these people. They are unbelievers, not believers. Why? In 2 Corinthians 5:8, it says of believers that we are absent from the body and present with the Lord. But in our story in Luke 16, where I'd like you to go again to, we're told that the rich man who died was in hell, and the word is Hades again. Luke 16, please. Now, I think it's important we know what the facts are. The facts are that the word Hades is a Greek word that is used in Greek translations of the Old Testament Hebrew scriptures for the word Sheol. Sheol is the Hebrew word for grave or the place of the departed. Now, in the Old Testament, you've got both righteous and wicked going to Sheol when they die. The grave, the place of the departed. And in Greek, the word Hades is a parallel word to Sheol. And it wasn't until the time of Jesus Christ that we learned about Sheol Hades, just to put it in a compound, put both words together. We learned that there is a gulf fixed between the righteous and the unrighteous in this place of the departed. Now, look at this carefully in Luke 16 again. In verse 22, the last phrase says, the rich man died, was buried, and in hell or Hades, he lifted up his eyes being in torment. Now, Lazarus wasn't in torment, but he died. But in describing where he went, verse 22 says, into Abraham's bosom. We're talking comfort, encouragement into the lap of our father Abraham. Now, Lazarus is not in torment. The rich man is. And in verse 26, Jesus said, there is a great gulf fixed, and you can't pass over. Now, you might say, well, now, wait a minute, David. If the sea gives up the dead that are in it, and Hades gives up its dead, then maybe it gives up both righteous and wicked, because both of them went to the same spot where there's a great gulf fixed. Now turn to Ephesians chapter 4. We're going to get a little thick here, so hang in there. You need to think very seriously and examine the scriptures as to whether those things are so. Ephesians chapter 4, verse 8. Wherefore he saith, when he ascended up on high, he led captivity captive and gave gifts unto men. Now, those are not the charismatic gifts. The Greek word is doma, not charisma. Doma means the thing that is given. And the thing that he gave is mentioned in verse 11. Apostles, prophets, evangelists, and pastor teachers. They are gifted men, we would say, given to the church to perfect the saints for the work of ministry. Now, according to the Bible, when he ascended, he took captivity captive. In other words, somebody leaves. And then what he does is give to those who remain gifted men to help them, to teach them, to guide them. Now, verse 9. Now that he ascended, what is it but that he also descended first? You can't ascend unless you descended first, is the idea. Into the lower parts of the earth. He that descended is the same also that ascended up far above all heavens, that he might fill all things. And he gave apostles, prophets, evangelists. Now, the whole problem here is, what do we mean by the captivity that he took captive with him when he ascended to heaven? Who's that talking about? What does it mean when he descended into the lower parts of the earth? Now, there are two major views among Bible teachers. I'm talking about men that love the Bible now. I don't pay attention to guys that don't. The guys that love the Bible, they're Bible teachers. There's two major views of this. One is that when Jesus descended, it's talking about him coming into the world, his humiliation, his incarnation, God becoming man, born as a baby, leaving heaven's glory, coming to earth, describing it as lower in relationship to heaven that would be higher. So he descends, humiliation, incarnation, then he finally ascends, exaltation to the right hand of God, and the captivity that he leads captive would be sin, death, and hell by his coming to the world to die on a cross. And so he leads captive sin, death, hell, etc. Victory is the idea, victory over all of that. There's a second view that the captivity that he took captive are the Old Testament believers that were in Sheol or in Hades, the great gulf fixed between the two. He's taking Old Testament believers captive, and then because they're departing, he's leaving gifted men to teach God's church, which will now be on the earth. There's a lot of reasons to believe that the latter view is the correct view. First of all, the lower parts of the earth in this view is hell itself. In this view, Jesus Christ, between the time of his death on the cross and his resurrection and ascension, literally goes to Sheol or Hades, and he does two things. One, he proclaims the gospel in the sense of judgment to all of those believers or unbelievers who rejected the message of God and his Messiah. He gives them a vivid illustration, object lesson, by showing up himself. And secondly, he takes captive all the Old Testament believers. Now, where do we learn about this? Turn to 1 Peter chapter 3. 1 Peter chapter 3. In 1 Peter 3, beginning at verse 18, 1 Peter 3, 18, it says, Christ also hath once suffered for sins, the just for the unjust, that he might bring us to God, being put to death in the flesh, but quickened or made alive by the Spirit. Now watch this. By which also he went and preached unto the spirits in prison, who sometime were disobedient when once the long-suffering of God waited in the days of Noah, while the ark was preparing, took 120 years, in which few, that is eight souls, Noah, his three sons, and their wives, were saved by water. The like figure, the Greek word is antitype, unto which even baptism doth also now save us, not the putting away of the filth of the flesh, but the answer, that's our English word apologetic, of a good conscience toward God by the resurrection of Jesus Christ, who's gone into heaven and is on the right hand of God, angels and authorities and powers being made subject unto him. Now, this is hard to understand, I know. And perhaps we should have a series of messages on it. But if you look at that text and break it down, it had to happen at some point. My point is, when did Jesus do this? If it matches with Ephesians 4 in our argument, things kind of come together. That is, that when he descended in the lower parts of the earth, he literally went down to Hades, Sheol. He preached to the spirits in prison. That civilization, which could have numbered 5 to 6 billion people based on longevity and the reproduction of children in the book of Genesis, he preached to that generation, all of whom died in the flood, that they had rejected God's message. They rejected the preaching of Enoch, who said the Lord comes with 10,000 of his saints to bring judgment. They rejected all of this. They rejected the preaching of Noah. And God said, my spirit will not always strive with man. And that whole generation was slaughtered in the flood. They all died except eight people, Noah, his sons, and their wives. And the Bible even applies that to us now. The flood water matches baptism. What happened to everybody in the flood water? They all died. So what is baptism picture? Death. When you go down into the water, when you're baptized, it pictures death. Death to the old life. It also matches the death and burial of Jesus Christ. You're identified with him. When you come up out of the water, it's a sign you've been resurrected to new life. If you keep the typology going, baptism saves you like a type does. because what was in the water, the flood water that saved the eight souls, was the ark. And you are in Christ, who is our ark. And that's why we're saved, why we're not lost. So baptism pictures, when you're baptized, a death to the old life and resurrection to the new life. And he even says, you'll have the answer of a good conscience toward God. How? By the resurrection of Jesus Christ, because he is alive. It's true. It's not just a religious ritual or symbolism. You're picturing what is actually true. And where is Christ now? At the right hand of the throne of God. In other words, he proclaims to the spirits in prison a message of judgment. He also takes captive Old Testament believers to heaven. Now, to verify some of this, it's interesting to me that when Paul experienced a stoning, apparently very close to death, if not death, and then resuscitated in some way, he says that he was caught up to the third heaven and that he called it paradise. That's in 2 Corinthians 12, so we better look at it. So everybody has a chance to examine whether or not the preacher has lost his mind or this is truly in the Bible. 2 Corinthians chapter 12. 2 Corinthians chapter 12, verse 2. I knew a man in Christ above 14 years ago, whether in the body, I cannot tell, or whether out of the body. He's talking about himself. God knoweth. Such a one caught up to the third heaven, that's where God dwells. And I knew such a man, whether in the body or out of the body, I can't tell, God knoweth, how he was caught up into paradise and heard unspeakable words, which is not lawful for a man to utter. Of such a one will I glory, yet of myself I will not glory, but in mine infirmities. For though I would desire to glory, I shall not be a fool, for I will say the truth. But now I forbear, lest any man should think of me above that which he seeth me to be, or that he heareth of me, and lest I should be exalted above measure to the abundance of the revelations that was given to me, a thorn in the flesh, the messenger of Satan to buffet me, lest I should be exalted above measure, and so on and so forth. Third heaven, verse 2, paradise, verse 4. Now, follow me, please. I know this is tough. On the cross, what did Jesus say to the thief who repented and said, Lord, remember me when you come in your kingdom? He said, today you will be what? With me in paradise. We got a little shift of location here in paradise. Is everybody following? By the time of the Apostle Paul, after the resurrection ascension of Christ, and the New Testament church starts, now we got the Apostle Paul saying he was caught up to the third heaven. He said, I was caught up to paradise. Oh, wait a minute. I thought paradise was Abraham's bosom where all the righteous dead were down in Sheol and Hades. Didn't Jesus say, today thou will be with me in paradise? Then if it's today you will be with me, it's his death because he didn't resurrect until the third day. So it couldn't have been heaven. It's somewhere else. Today you would be with me in paradise. Apparently the thief who also died, who believed, goes, he's a part of the Old Testament saints, goes to Sheol, Hades, where there's a great gulf fixed between believers and unbelievers. But by the time of the Apostle Paul, paradise, where all the believers are, great gulf fixed between them and unbelievers, is now in heaven, the third heaven. Now, to believers, it says when you die, you're absent from the body and present with the Lord. It never says again you go to Hades or Sheol. Never again. But somebody does go to Hades, and that is the unbeliever. And in that compartment of Hades that had unbelievers in it, it's torment. Is everybody following now? So when he descended, he proclaims the gospel to the generation before the flood, and he also takes captive a host of captives with him to heaven. Now the Old Testament believers are in heaven. By the way, I believe something happened on earth to visibly demonstrate that an unusual thing is happening in the lower parts of the earth. According to Matthew 27, some Old Testament saints were resurrected and literally were started walking around, and people could talk to them. Don't look at me like that. It's in the Bible. People read that passage, they just keep moving on. They don't want to deal with it. I believe that God visibly demonstrates to that generation that the unusual event of taking all the Old Testament believers to their hope that they'd all longed for actually occurred by the power of Jesus Christ. He did it. Took all the Old Testament saints to heaven with him. Now if you die, whether you're Old Testament or New Testament, absent from the body, present with the Lord. Who's left in Hades, in the place of torment? All the unbelievers. That's why I say the place from which they come, Revelation 20, clearly identifies them, because the sea gave up the dead that is in it, and death and Hades delivered up the dead in them. So they're only unbelievers, because the righteous are already in heaven. Everybody with me? You may be with me, but just think about the problem you're going to have explaining this to your friends tomorrow.
That's Bible teacher David Hocking, and this is Hope for Today. He'll be back in a moment to close out our time. First, though, David's son Matt is here, and together we're going to tell you about this month's special home Bible study resource. It's perfect for Christmas. And Matt, let's talk about it.
Jesus is the real reason for the season. We often hear and see this stated right about now as we're rushing about shopping, trying to figure out, you know, what our loved ones might want, how much we dare spend, what we'll eat on Christmas Day, and how we'll possibly manage all the details, right, Jim? Yeah.
Well, it could all be very overwhelming. And Matt, I think you would agree, it can leave us far short of the blessing God wants for us
right
at this holiday season. Yeah.
You know, in our hearts, how do we experience the joy, marvel, and wonder of the Christmas season?
Yeah.
I mean, how do we find that true blessing that warms our hearts during the season?
And how do we make this the best holiday ever?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Jim and I recommend this 2025 Hope for Today Christmas package.
Yeah, inside, you're going to find David Hocking's booklet. And man, this is such a beautiful book, and it has blessed so many people, so many of our listening family over the years. Jesus Christ, the Reason. And it starts with a Christmas story, but then it unveils God's plan from all eternity, his plan of salvation and redemption that really accelerated into motion at the incarnation.
And we have a 3-message special audio series also titled Jesus Christ, the Reason.
Get the package today and make Christmas this year truly Christ-centered. A wonderful study. Just $20. Again, the book, I'm calling it a book, Matt. It's an 87-page booklet, Jesus Christ, the Reason. And then the 3-message series by David Hocking. Together, the whole package, just $20. And your purchase is going to also help the ministry of Hope for Today.
And the Word became flesh and dwelt among us, and we beheld his glory, the glory as of the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth. No one has seen God at any time. The only begotten Son who is in the bosom of the Father, he has declared him.
Wow.
John 1:1-5, 14-18.
This is the Christ of Christmas, isn't it?
Amen.
Discover him in a deeper, more special way this season with the Hope for Today Christmas package.
Again, the package is my dad's booklet, Jesus Christ, the Reason, plus his 3-part miniseries also titled Jesus Christ, the Reason, and it's just $20 this month.
And when you make this purchase, consider adding a special year-end donation with your order, or maybe send a donation all by itself. Either way, your gift to Hope for Today will help us finish the year and get a strong start for the new year.
And remember to please pray for Hope for Today.
To get your copy of the 2025 Hope for Today Christmas package, including David's book, Jesus Christ, the Reason, and his 3-message audio series also titled Jesus Christ, the Reason, the complete package, just $20, call us at 800-75-BIBLE, that's in the U.S., or 888-75-BIBLE in Canada, and Bible is 242-53. You can also get the 2025 Hope for Today Christmas package online at davidhocking.org. This is going to make your Christmas special, and your purchase will also help the ministry of Hope for Today. And just before David returns to close out our study, I do want to take a moment to speak to you from the heart of Hope for Today as we come to the close of another year. I want you to consider standing with us if God has used this daily broadcast in your life. Your year-end gift can help us continue teaching his word clearly and without compromise as we enter the new year. We don't want to be overdramatic here, but we do want to tell you simply that your support right now really does make a difference in what we're able to do in the months and the year ahead. So if the Lord leads you, we would be grateful to hear from you with a donation today and each month as possible in the new year. You can write to Hope for Today, Box 3927, Tustin, California, 92781. That's in the U.S. In Canada, write to Hope for Today, Box 15011, RPO, Seven Oaks, Abbotsford, B.C., V2S8P1. Or call us at 800-75-BIBLE in the U.S., 888-75-BIBLE in Canada, and donate online at davidhawking.org. And here's David.
Boy, do we love teaching the book of Revelation. I think we've had about four times teaching it, and plus this one. And we're excited about the work of the Lord in Revelation, because that's telling us what is coming. And it's an awesome, awesome time. The great white throne, unbelievers, will be resurrected in a temporary body. They're going to be thrown into the lake of fire. Uh-oh. So it's very, very important that we understand this day is coming. All unbelievers are going to be judged, and primarily their rejection of the Messiah is the issue. Oh, my friends, don't reject the only one who can save you.
Thank you, David. And next time on the broadcast, a final look at the Great White Throne from Revelation 20, verses 11 through 15. You're not going to want to miss this, because David's going to reveal what happens right after the final judgment and why what you believe today determines where you'll stand forever. Join us then, right here on Hope for Today.